This is the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Right now, our favorite part of the show, the Rex Ryan Report. It's brought to you by Bud Light, and Rex joins us right now. So let's begin, Coach, with the local teams, as we try to avoid doing that, but we can't help it because it seems to be a lot of news coming out of both teams. I will start with the positive. I'll let Bart go to the other side of things, but I need to ask you, Ron Rivera going for two. So the Giants are pretty much, they get the win based on Rivera going for two. Do you like that move on the road, or do you question it?
Yeah, I mean, Riverboat Ron. This is the same guy got a reputation for being Riverboat Ron, and he just found out that if you don't have Cam Newton, Riverboat Ron doesn't work very well. And the other thing is, Riverboat Ron is the same guy that punted when they were down three scores with 9 minutes left to go in a game. He punted on a fourth down at midfield. He punted when he's down two touchdowns with like 5 minutes left. So Riverboat Ron's got to make up his mind. Are you going to gamble? Are you not? Whatever. I mean, give me a break. The football team is horrendous. That team is absolutely horrendous. But Ron Rivera, let's face it, he had the worst team in the league last year, one of them. Maybe they're the second worst team in the league in Carolina. So this is no different. But I love the fact, hey, the Giants, you won a game, and they're one game out of first. which is absolutely crazy, because I was going to look at it from the other end, like, what in the hell are you doing winning that football game? You realize you got Trevor Lawrence sitting out there, and you got a chance at him. Don't you have to go for him? You know, but I know the competition is fierce for that pick. But you got to lose, dude. Like, this is a once in every 20-year player. So, you know, they won the game, but they lost in the big picture of things.
Yeah, how we said, like, you won the battle, but you lost the war, right? So
exactly.
It's looking like you know, Minnesota's trying to get in that sweepstakes. You know, I'm happy that we didn't spend all that money on Kirk Cousins and he did shun us, because you look at what happened, you know it's an opportunity, you know, for them. You know, that could have been us. It could have been us stuck with the Kirk Cousins contract and trying to figure things out. Like, we're bad, but, you know, they're bad with a quarterback, and they've invested a lot. You know, you think about the kid Jefferson, you think about all the weapons that he has out there, and the fact that they put that type of performance up. You know, I think they did as a blessing in disguise, but, you know, they're on the radar because I think they can start strategically in the tank for Trevor Lawrence as well.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a bad move. And then look, we've seen with Zimmer, he's good 1 year, not so good the next year. Good a year, not so much. So it kind of fluctuates. You know, he's always been up and down. And the play of Kirk Cousins is no different than that. But nobody should have ever considered Kirk Cousins a franchise quarterback.
Hmm. It's incredible now, looking back and seeing that contract and also the impact it had on different franchises, Washington, Minnesota, and, of course, the Jets. And that's where we'll go next, obviously, Rex. I want to add, there's so many places to go here with the Jets and where they are now at 0-6, the only team now left that's winless. You talk about the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes. They're the lead dog right now. But what happened before the game going in, and I'm sure you saw this, Greg Williams saying what he said on Friday about how it's really not all the defense. It seems like he's trying to distance himself a little bit from Adam Gase and what's happening with the offense and with this team. What do you read out of that situation?
Yeah, I read what it should be, that he's not a team player, and he'd be the first guy you fire. And then you're going to fire Adam Gase, but if I was Adam Gase, I'd fire him in a New York minute. Right now, I'd fire him. He's not any good anyway. He's living off a reputation. You know, he had one decent year. He has one every 4 or 5 years as a coordinator. So to me, I'd get rid of him. And you know, they're going to play out the string, because he's probably forced on Gase when he got the job. So he probably won't make that decision. But this guy, I mean, how in the hell? Do you realize you work for the head coach? All right? And to me, you got to understand there's a hierarchy, regardless of how incompetent the head coach is.
Now, you talk about that, but, you know, it's one of those things, like, he wasn't lying, right? Because I think he wanted to make sure that he can defend his reputation, saying, you know, I understand that, you know, the defense isn't playing well, but, you know, some of those points, and we've been part of that for a little bit, you know, some of those points when you talk about, you know, scoring defense and you talk about interceptions for pick sixes and things of that sort, you know, you talk about yesterday the Jets were, I believe, like, two or three for 17 on third down. We always talked about three and outs being a bit of a turnover, flips the field. You know, so he was just trying to, I think he was trying to listen, it's definitely wrong, but he wasn't lying about, you know, some of the facts about why the defensive numbers are down where they are.
No, but he's not lying. he's definitely not lying. We get it, but you don't have to say it. All know it. You don't have to say it. And to me, it just showed that, like, if you're a new head coach coming in, you're going to keep this guy? Hell no, you're not keeping this guy.
But this is the crazy thing, Rex, right? So, like, the same thing make you laugh, make you cry. We talked about Adam Gase and his, you know, and his disappointment in Le'Veon Bell for talking to the coaches through the media. But when you reveal that to the production staff on CBS, aren't you doing the same exact thing that you told Le'Veon Bell not to do?
That's a great point. I just think he was so ticked off. Like, he's supposed to be the leader of this team. And we get it. He's leading this franchise right down to the bottom. But that's okay, because this team's going to go to the bottom and they're going to come back. And that's what we all want to believe as Jet fans, that it can be resurrected. It can. But it's, you know, Joe Douglas is a good man. Joe Douglas, I've known him for 20 years. Bart, you and I both go back with Joe Douglas. In a way, if you're Joe Douglas, you might want the first pick anyway.
Right.
Because you know you got once-in-a-lifetime player, sitting there for you to draft. And that's a pretty good start if you're going to build a franchise that way. But if you're – and right now, the Jet fans, and no bigger Jet fans than Bart Scott, myself, and a million others, nobody wants to see this team win a game now. You've already blown the season.
Yeah, exactly.
Better not win a game now.
You hate feeling that way, but it's hard not to believe that. And if
they're
shipping off pieces, Rex. Yeah, McClendon gone now as well.
Yeah, I saw McClendon going, but when I heard somebody said they traded a defensive tackle, I'm like, oh, shoot, don't trade Williams.
He actually grades very well.
He's actually figuring it out. And Avery Williams, if I was Avery Williams, I'd be knocking on the door like, hey, Pittsburgh got somebody hurt.
Nobody saved me.
Y'all don't need me.
Yeah, I volunteer. Y'all like Blake Cashman? Hey, Blake Cashman, here you go, buddy. Here you go. It's been great knowing you. Just send me to Pittsburgh. I'm out.
Man, what is going on?
Because Avery Williamson actually flashed. You can tell that he's still playing hard.
He's a good player.
He's been in the doghouse, right? They've been trying not to play him. You know, he wouldn't be there if it wasn't for C.J. Mosley. He would have been a cap casualty. So I'm saying, hey, man, listen, if I'm a veteran and you want to go and evaluate your young guys, what I disagree with is the fact that Frank Gore is your starting running back. I mean, what the hell are we doing? Like, next year he's going to be – listen.
They don't even run the ball.
He played with Moses, man. I don't want to see him. I know what the hell he is.
Frank Gore played when I played. So,
he played with Sam Huff.
Frank Gore, but my goodness, you're right.
It's like, can we see P. Ryan? Like, I want to see this young kid play into his tongue. I want to see his tongue hanging out his mouth. I want to see him 30, 40 carries, see what he can handle, what he can't handle. Right? Let's see if he's Sean Green, if he can turn it on in the second half and learn how to run downhill behind his pads. And, he may get blowed up, but you're going to find out about his character. This is what I want to see. I don't want to see Frank Gore in the backfield first, second down. Okay, third down, so he can help with protection, maybe leak out some screen passes. Okay, but listen, I know what Frank Gore is, and it's been a hell of a career. And his durability, his greatest ability, and he's going to maybe have an opportunity at the Hall of Fame. But I don't need to see Frank Gore back there, man. I don't need to see Frank Gore getting his helmet knocked off. I don't need to see the pack of hot dogs on the back of his neck. Listen, I don't understand. I don't need to see none of that, man.
No, I'm with you, Bart. It's time to go into the developing stage. And the bad thing is, these coaches, like, let's face it, these coaches, no, they're fighting for their lives, but they ain't. I mean, they're done. They're already done. They had an opportunity. They failed. But now I wouldn't be surprised if Joe Douglas goes back and says, hey, look, man, you can still be the head coach. But you're gonna have to play these young guys. We're looking to develop these guys. And if you don't like the job that way, we'll hire an interim guy, John Jefferson or whoever the heck, and just say, no, if you want the job, you're going to develop people. That's where it is.
And that's
where it is, unfortunately. But if you get shut out by the Miami Dolphins, and you're 0-6 right now. Yeah. I'm sorry, but we want to see young players. Bart hits it on the head. You want to see young players and see this team possibly develop and then see what you have in the end. And you know you're going to have to build this team and do it the correct way. And with people that are locked in step together, and that's how you're going to build this team.
I mean, I think that, you think about Adam Gase, you know, choosing Joe Douglas, and you thought that was supposed to be a match made of heaven, but Joe Douglas didn't choose Adam Gase. So he's not tied to anybody. And I understand, you know, friendships, you know, happen, but this is business, man. And at the end of the day,
this
goes on my permanent right there. Listen, he's going to become a meme.
Did you see his face during that game?
I'm so happy he didn't look up, because you know what social media would do to him. They would put the Jordan crying face on Joe Douglas' big head. You know what I'm saying? And nobody wants that one. You know what I'm saying? We saw him put the Jordan face, crying face on the fly that was on Mike Pence's head. You know what I'm saying? And then they made a whole Twitter page about him. And the Pence fly Jordan face got 200,000 followers. We don't need that type of stuff for Joe Douglas, man. But he can't hide it, man. The camera's always watching. And it's like, he's like, man, I can't believe this, man. Like, this is, you out there saying, this is the Miami Dolphins. When did we become the creamsicle Tampa Bay Buccaneers? When did we become the Aints? When did we become the 1990 Arizona Cardinals? When did we, like, it's like so crazy how quickly this happened.
Hey, your home team, Detroit Lions,
yes,
when they were over.
Right. When did it become the Dan Orlovsky Detroit Lions? Like, now we got butt names, even
on
big plays.
That was a bad football team. You're right.
Listen, I love Dan Orlovsky, man, but I came in the league and I left the league and I never knew he existed. I swear.
We all know him for stepping out of the bag of the end zone.
And that's the only thing. I was like, oh, that guy. That's because I'm a Lions fan. Before that, I never had heard of Dan Orlovsky. I thought that was some type of German sausage.
Let me ask you this, Rex. Can we at least, as Jets fans, take solace in the fact that the Patriots have a losing record at the 6 weeks into the season?
Well,
is there anything to be read from that?
That's what's so mind-boggling about this. Look, we knew this is not going to be – none of these teams were going to be 500 team. Like, Miami's not going to be a 500 team. And going into the season, you knew darn well New England wouldn't either. So this was an opportunity. This year was an opportunity that, hey, we can surprise some people. I literally thought they could surprise people. But, man, oh, man, am I disappointed with this group. And it's just – yes, it rightfully starts with the head coach.
I'm disappointed.
And it really does, you know, and we all get it. It just, but he was never a match here. He was never a match for New York.
Yeah.
Man, you know what?
His
I'm disappointed in the effort, Rex. That's what disappoints me the most. I mean, listen, you can be bad, man, but I swear I'd be out there scraping people up. I'd be like, yup, you ain't going to the playoffs neither. Nope, you ain't going. Listen, your season's about to be horrible because I'm about to knock you out. I'll be like, when is somebody just going to take it personal and say, you know what? I'm about to be Sammy Salsa out here knocking people out. Like, I don't get it. Like, it's one thing to lose. I'm not going to put that stink on my face. I want the team that plays me after they finished playing. I was like, man, that team sucked, man. But Bart, that Bart Scott played hard, man. That boy was scraping people out. He don't deserve to be on that team. He deserved better than that. And I don't see anybody stepping up to say, you know what? I don't see anybody. Everybody on the film kind of looks the same. Everybody on the film kind of moves at the same speed. Nobody's like popping out of their skin and saying, you know what? I'm going to play at a different speed, a different tempo, because no matter what, it still means something important to me. And ain't nobody going to be saying that I'm going to screw up.
I think what happens when you got such a dislike for your coach, sometimes it's hard. It really is. And I think that's kind of what I see. And I was kind of half jokingly about how, look, all the Miami guys are going to be revved up because they don't like Adam Gase, the guys that were there when he was there. But unfortunately, neither do the Jets. And that's what it kind of looks like.
I agree.
And so these guys, unfortunately, are like – They are playing with that kind of mentality. And you're right, Bart. Look, I don't care how bad it would be. I'd be sitting there as a football coach. I always used to tell everybody, well, judge me for, you know, guys, you want to see what I think about this game? Watch how I coach. start with me. Like, I'm going to coach my absolute butt off. And they're going to know they're prepared, and they're going to see me with the energy and the passion that I have. It starts from that head man. And if he doesn't have that passion, you know, we know he's rich as you know what. Remember that comment? Well, that went, yep. You know. It's just wrong. It's absolutely wrong.
And the crazy thing is, the Miami Dolphins were in the same exact position last year. But one thing you can say is, like, man, this group play hard. Man, you see how this team compete? We thought they were tanking for Tua. They end up getting Tua anyway. But they were playing hard, man. Mm-hmm. Like, it's supposed to look a certain way. You don't cheat the game that way. And when you see teams playing that way, you just see that they're defeated. And like you said, they don't play, and it's impossible for the coaches to get them inspired to play. Because, like, they should come out and least have more fight in them than that. And I think that guys are just giving up, and this is what happens. Unfortunately, this is the bad thing that happens when you have a lot of guys on a one-year contract. See, when you're winning and you're in the middle of it, people on one-year contracts play for another contract. I think guys are playing not to get hurt, and they don't want to make sure that they can hit the free agent market and have another opportunity with another team, because I think if all things are equal, they don't even want to be on this team next year.
Yeah, and you know what I compare it to, and Bart, we've seen this, is like when a team goes into like the last week of the season and they're done. They know they're done and they don't want to get hurt or whatever. But unfortunately, this is week six.
Yeah.
And we're seeing the same kind of deal. So it's just, you know, and we go back and us being, you know, Jet fans, we remember the Rich Kotite years. And you know, but we saw Bill Parcells flip it. You know, and that's what's got to be the encouraging thing. And here's the best part about it is if they, let's say they do get the first pick, because you guys, remember I said there's no way in hell. Well, now I look at it, maybe there is a chance that they're going to end up with the first pick. But if they get it, they can build a franchise around that kid. Like, that's going to be unbelievable. And it's something they were saying that they were going to do with Sam Darnold. It just never happened.
All right, before we let you go, let's go around the league a little bit, because there's other interesting headlines to talk about. And one of them that I want to ask you is this one. And I know it's a setup, and you know it's a setup, but let's do it anyway. Browns-Steelers. Did it say more about what the Steelers are this year in the league, or does it say a lot more about what the Browns really are in this year?
Well, the Browns have lost two games this year. I mean, they got smoked by the Ravens and the Steelers. And if they don't win the physical battle, the Browns are in trouble. Baker Mayfield's not a pocket quarterback. He's the 31st rated quarterback in the pocket. And for everybody that doubted what I said about him, it's rung true. But I said it draft day. You know, and people can jump on him now and say it. Well, I said it draft day. When everybody was saying he was the next Drew Brees, I'm like, he's not even close. Put Drew Brees on the Cleveland Browns, see what their record would be right now with those weapons. They put everything around this kid. So it's an epic failure if he doesn't produce. Stefanski's been smart. They've been running the football, moving the pocket for Baker. That's when he can be efficient. But if you put him sitting back in the pocket, shame on you.
Yep, but that's what happens when you have two outstanding defensive ends that's going to set those edges that force them to stay in that pocket, because if you put them on the move, you're running him essentially into their best playmakers in Dupree and T.J. Watt. I want to go to the Green Bay Packers, man, because, listen, we love Mike Pettine. You know, he's a friend, you know, right? But, listen, until he decides to get some guys in there that can stop the run, I don't care what he has on the outside, what he has on the back end, he doesn't have linebackers of impact in that middle that can send a message. And when they can't stop the run, they'll win a lot of games. But when it comes to play the better teams, they're just going to get ran all over. And they you can't win that way.
Yeah, they're soft as Charmin. And I remember he was bragging about they only run like 20 plays a game, or, you know, 20 to 25 snaps. That's their game plan on defense. Well, when you tinker with the system, you don't run the system. And that's what I see here. I don't recognize that defense. That's supposed to be what we used to. That ain't close. So he needs to buckle up too and say, hey, man, it's time to, like, you need to start dictating to the offense, not the other way. And I see them all, you know, they're always playing, well, we got a great offense.
Right.
That, you know, and that's how they're playing. They are soft. That defense is absolutely soft, and it drives me crazy because I got Pettine there, I got Mike Smith there, and it drives me crazy that they ought to know better. And if they don't, they're going to get run. They'll get run out in the first round.
Yeah, because they have all the weapons you would need, you know, theoretically. But you know, understanding that defense, that system that you put together, has always been centered around tough linebacker play in the middle, and I just don't see that from them. And you can have all those pretty weapons on the outside, but if you can't get into third and seven, it's nothing that you can do. You can't dictate, and you can't cut these guys loose on the back end.
Yeah, you're going to have to be creative in your run defense. You're going to have to start blitzing safeties, and that's what you have to do. You don't just take an ass whipping, because right now they're taking it.
All right, we've got another Monday doubleheader, and this one actually an earlier start too. So quickly on both games, first and foremost, Chiefs at Buffalo. The weather's going to be a little iffy this afternoon. It's a 5 o'clock start, which is a bit weird. 2-4-1 teams. What are you looking for in this game?
Well, I'm looking for the Buffalo Bills defensive ends, especially the left defensive end. You've got to contain Patrick Mahomes. Last week, when the Bills got destroyed by Tennessee, the biggest factor was that a defensive end was losing contain just over and over and over. And you've got to be disciplined enough to understand you cannot let this guy break contain on you. Thought the Raiders did a good job of it the last time they played the Chiefs. So get to the quarterback and then come under, not the reverse way. Buffalo's a better football team than they showed against Tennessee, so I think it's going to be a close game. But again, I'm going to take the Chiefs.
All right, and you mentioned also how the NFC East is just, you know, you're talking about one game now back of first for all these teams, 1-4-1 for Philly, and the Giants in Washington 1-5. Dallas at 2-3, but without their starting quarterback now, it's a new era with Andy Dalton now starting for Dak. Arizona at Dallas tonight is the typical 8 o'clock now Monday night game. Can Dallas get the win here with Dalton?
Yeah, they absolutely can, and the reason for it is because Arizona's defense is, the worst defense in the league. They've been that way for 2 years in a row. So, yeah, they absolutely can. But he's got to be smart. Like, just, you know, hey, we get it. You got Zeke Elliott back there. But do those things right here and hit the open guy. You don't have to press the issue and just let the offense work, and I think he'll be fine.
Rex, always great to catch up with you. Always great to talk to you as well. Thanks again. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, my pleasure, guys.
Before we get to audio files, O'Bart, we got to talk about this fight, Lopez Lomachenko. And I don't know if it's an upset, but everybody was talking about his win. A unanimous decision. Now, the 119-102 score by one judge seemed a little bit lopsided. I know you have a take on it. You and Peter Rosenberg did a great show Saturday night leading into fight night, which was terrific. Look, Lopez paid out at +315, so yeah. A lot of people believed in him. But they're calling him now boxing's next superstar. What did you think about this fight?
I mean, listen, he's charismatic. He has a father that's controversial. He blabs off a lot. And listen, the kid came in and he looked prepared. I think, you know, you heard the cast and you heard, you know, Andre Ward saying, you know, that, hey, he didn't expect him to have this much hand speed and be this athletic. But I thought, you know, early on when you see a lot of, you know, seasoned veterans that's been in a lot of big fights before, they figure they can catch you late in the process. And that's what Lomachenko was doing. He was trying to let this kid punch himself out and try and get some steam off of his power punches, because he is a devastating puncher. But I thought in the second half of that fight, from the seventh round to probably the 11th, I thought that was all Lomachenko. And Lomachenko started to touch him and started to take more risk because he had to. But, you know, I thought that the kid showed a lot of heart when he came out in the 12th round. Instead of letting that momentum come, he went for broke, because I don't think, you know, like his father said, oh, we got this. I thought that fight was going to determine possibly who was going to win or if it was going to be a draw. You know, I would love to see a rematch. I think if they did it again. You hear Lomachenko talk about, you know, being off for 14 months, and you heard, you know, also you heard, you heard Lopez saying, hey, that he thought that he was going to come out slow because of that break. Well, now he's had a fight, so if they fight again in 8 months, it'll be something different. You don't just take 4 belts from somebody and then go on to somebody else, especially when you watch that fight over again. I think the closer people are going to find that fight, because he definitely won the second round. And if he won 4 rounds or 5 rounds in the second half, then that's 6-6. So for me, I want to see it again. Again, But, you know, I think that he's a good fighter in that division. But if he ever wants to go up to his natural body weight because he's going to be bigger and grow out of the division and go to a welterweight, he has Bud Crawford sitting there. He has Errol Spence sitting there. You know, he can want to say that he beat the pound-for-pound champion. To me, it's been Bud Crawford, and Bud Crawford is on a collision course with Errol Spence, you know, who has a fight with Garcia, another, you know, great fighter that when he gets to the big stage just can't get the big win, but he's been knocking on the doorstep. He's a capable fighter. But for me, you know, my money's worth. I'd rather see it again. But then he's talking a lot of smack. You know, you got Garcia sitting there, the Golden Boy clone. You know what I mean? He has a huge Instagram following, and you know, he's very charismatic young man. You know, the flash, you know, flash for the dramatic. But then you got Devin Haney there. Like, you know, before we go there, let's talk about Haney. And he was talking about, listen, the division in boxing is in a great position. And while I like boxing over UFC, I can appreciate what the UFC does, but everybody has an L there. And because what happens is the better fighter usually wins in boxing because you have a standing eight that if you get clipped, you get opportunity to recover from it and to do it again. In boxing, even a bum can clip somebody and it's over with because you get to pounce on them. So that's why I like boxing.
You mean, you mean UFC. You mean
UFC because you get to pounce on them. You know, I like boxing because if you make a mistake and you get somebody, you got to get them more than once. You can't just clip them and catch them with a lucky punch or catch them with something and then pounce on them.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you could. Yeah. This is two different styles, obviously, but there's a lot of excitement about Lopez, a Brooklyn guy. You know, Mike Tyson last night shouting him out, another Brooklyn champion. So a lot of excitement around him. We'll see if they do end up getting that rematch and where it goes. But still, for boxing, as they keep looking for different superstars and are obviously waiting for the next heavyweight fight to come around.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, we'll obviously see when
Tyson Fury
gets back into the ring. So, but still, this was a lot of fun on a Saturday night, and it was on ESPN. It was free to watch.
Free 99.
Yeah, it was actually, it was definitely something to tune into and was certainly a lot of fun. 800-919-3776 is the number. We'll keep calls rolling. We do have lunch money coming up as well. We got two games tonight on Monday Night Football to talk about. But right now, we go around the world of sports in audio files.
The audio file.
I say NFL. We did talk a little bit with Rex about this, but we haven't had a chance to spend too much time on it. And that is what was I don't know, Bart, were you surprised by the Bucs? 38-10. I mean, you're looking forward to Rodgers and Brady. And by the way, we gave you the numbers on Friday, how Rodgers just doesn't seem to do well on the road against Super Bowl MVP quarterbacks. Yep. And Brady just seems to feast when he's at home against great quarterbacks. They've only met each other. This is now their third meeting. And this is a blowout, though. And this was ugly. It got ugly quick because Rodgers threw two picks, and including a pick six. It was his first interception of the season, and it was a pick six. And, man, the game just turned at that point, didn't it?
No, absolutely. And you talk about, you know, they were up 10-0. It looked like they had the game in hand. It looked like the offense for the Buccaneers was sputtering. Then he found the old faithful Gronk and things got rolling.
Oh,
but
man.
I said, but if anybody had watched me on Get Up on Friday, while everybody was taking Aaron Rodgers and how it looked, I said, listen, man, it is a fatal flaw in this Green Bay team. And the fact that when they go against teams that can run the ball, that they struggle because that defense can get exploited and they play a certain way. And you heard me and Rex talk about it as well.
Yep.
That system was made around impact inside linebacker. They have no inside linebackers that are impact. They got the great ones, the Darius and Preston Smith on the outside, but they don't have any impact players there. So, you know, the linebacker position, the middle linebacker position, it's the heartbeat. It's the abdomen. It connects the back end to the front end. And without that, you're lost. You're two separate units. So, I mean, listen, they're always going to struggle. We saw Green Bay with the 13-3 record just get destroyed by the San Francisco 49ers. And until they address that, they can have all the great play from quarterback that they want. And they can have all the great pass rushers. It's going to be all for nothing because when you go against other good teams, you got to be a complete football team, not just one-dimensional.
Yeah, and obviously we saw a Packers offense that was averaging over 30 points a game in the first couple of weeks of the season be held to 10, and Aaron Rodgers feels like they actually needed this.
I feel like we needed a little bit of a wake-up call at some point this season because things have been so good, and there's been so much talk maybe outside the building about the ease with which we're, you know, moving the ball on offense and scoring. You know, I think we need a kind of a kick in the ass a little bit as a little bit of a wake-up to stop feeling ourselves so much and get back to the things that got us this position.
I'll take that attitude from him, but obviously there's a lot of concern. Bart mentioned it on the defensive side, but that offense was anemic, and it really turned on two picks. One was a pick six, not a great throw. The other one was a tip that ended up into another interception, and Tom Brady took advantage of that. They scored, and that game never was the same. Another game that caught our attention was Denver going into New England and pulling out a win. They were up in that game. It finished 18-12. That game was 18-3 after three quarters. Cam Newton did not, like, nobody played well, though, by the way. It was really a kicker's game. Cam Newton was 17-25, 157 yards, no touchdown, two picks, as the Broncos got three turnovers from New England, which obviously with COVID, they've had some issues with practice. And Cam said after the game, this lack of practice was the biggest issue for his team.
I know exactly, you know, what it is. It's just respectfully for the sake of where we are right now. You know, I don't think it's beneficial for me to speak on that, being obviously the performance today. You know, it showed a lot of the time off showed, but yet, you know, like I said, I have to be better, and I will be better.
He says that. Now, the Patriots are 2-3, as we mentioned with Rex, and Rex did not jump all over that. You see how he kind of, like, went away from that when I asked him about it. It's the first time that the Patriots are under 500 this late into the season, 5 weeks, since 2002, Bart. Are you kidding me? And that was they were 3-4 at one point later in the season, obviously. But this is the latest they've gone since 2002.
But then they win the Super Bowl that year when
they finished 9-7 in 2002, and they it's the last time they did not get at least 10 wins.
Okay, gotcha.
So what the hell, man?
Like, so it's a chance. Then they'll beat Buffalo, and then we'll be like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah, yeah. But Cam does make a point. They've been through a lot with the positive tests. Obviously, he missed time. And then and then
Stephon
the Patriots
Gilmore.
Have
yep.
Yeah, the Patriots had to close down the facility and open it again. It's been crazy for them. But no excuses, but still, to have the Broncos walk in there and just do what they did in New England, you're not used to seeing that. All right, I mentioned it earlier. We do have a World Series matchup now. The Dodgers survive down 3-1 in their series with Atlanta. They roar back. They win Game 7 yesterday, and now they move on to the World Series against the Rays. I told you the stat. The last team to lead the majors in home runs and reach the World Series was the 09 Yankees. It's been a while. The Dodgers are that team. And Dave Roberts said after the game, this is our year. And he talks about what it meant.
To see where we came, and I preface this by saying the job's not done, and we all understand that. But I think that, to start with pandemic and a lot of things going on, and guys not with their families, and all the social injustice, it's been a lot of sacrifices from guys. And guys are uncomfortable, but still to kind of buy into the Dodgers and what we're doing to win baseball games and to make such a difficult year in some instances positive and a championship year for the Los Angeles Dodgers, the city of Los Angeles. So had our backs against the walls and had to win three games in a row against a very good ball club. And so there's a lot of things that had to happen, and we did it. So I don't know. It was just a kind of it all came together, and I was just really happy for our guys.
A couple of weeks after the Lakers win a championship, now the Dodgers could win one for L.A. as well. But Bart, would you say the Dodgers, there's so much pressure on them? This is almost must win for them, isn't it? And the Rays, it feels like house
yeah.
money.
Yeah, because look at them. Like, outside of the Yankees and some of the other teams, they have to have one of the heftiest, salaries in all of sports and all of baseball, especially what they just did with Mookie. You know what I mean? And this, once again, lets Kershaw off. Can you imagine now that they're going to face, you talk about the type of pitching that they're about to face going against Tampa Bay, the Rays. This is a totally different thing. And this is like David versus Goliath as far as, the salaries, so this is going to be interesting. This is going to be the tails. This is going to mean a lot moving forward with how baseball and people, build their teams, not with money, but with analytics and with, the right pieces that fit, the gaps and the holes that you have in your lineup and on your roster.
It's going to be something to watch. It's basically pitching versus hitting, although, of course, the Dodgers do have some pitching, and there's so much pressure on the Dodgers to win it all. It's been long enough that they keep winning divisions. They keep being that best team in baseball during the regular season. Cannot get it done. This is their opportunity. Certainly one to watch. All right, last but not least, Doc Emrick. It was only a couple of weeks ago in his 22nd Stanley Cup final that he has called, and it will be the last. And the Lightning winning the Cup, and here's what it sounded like.
Scramble in front, around behind now. Taken along by Radulov. Got it on back to the point of
One of the greats of all time, 22 Stanley Cup finals that he has called, 8 sports Emmys for play-by-play, 15 years for NBC Sports, several others for other networks as well, including ABC and Fox, CBS, 6 Olympics, 21 seasons with the Devils, calling all of their championship seasons as well, a Hockey Hall of Famer, one of the great announcers in the history of the game, and his career comes to an end. A guy who had, and most of the greats do, his own unique way of calling the sport with different ways. One of my favorites, like people were saying this on Twitter, is what are your favorite verbs that Doc would use to describe the sport? Waffle boarded, ladled, you know, big drive, like stuff like that, like that. Like Doc had his unique way to call a game. But something that you also hear a lot about the greats is, and I covered hockey for about 7 years, and I did a lot of Devils games because I was around the Devils a lot when they were winning cups. And Doc was one of the most approachable people you could ever, for a superstar broadcaster. Incredibly approachable, incredibly humble. Just a wonderful guy to talk hockey with. He loved talking, telling stories and relaying stories. And it was just, it really was amazing that you could just walk up to a guy like that, talk to him like he was a friend, and then see him on such a big stage calling some of the biggest games in the sport. A legend, called it a career. It was time. And we congratulate him on his career. And that is Audio Files. Thank you, Bart. Thank you, Anthony. Thank you, J-Dub. Yeah. The only thing we were missing was a little bit of hoop, right? But we got the draft coming up pretty soon. You know, NBA draft's coming soon, so we got more to get into in that stuff. By the way, wanted to point out that Linda from Manalapan, she was correct on the SNY quote.
And who was it?
That it was. Frank Gore.
Rockwalla.
It has been a day for the Jets, no question about it. But we do have more football today, as we have a doubleheader again. Chiefs and the Bills is a 5 o'clock start, a very bizarre Monday start up in rainy Buffalo, which should be interesting for the Chiefs, of course. So that's a game to keep an eye on.
And
then you have
the dark. That's going to be crazy playing into the dark. It's going to be light, and it's going to turn into the dark. So you talk about receivers not being able to track balls because the lights come on, or the lights may be on early. So you throw the balls up high. Not only do you have to compete with the sun potentially, but you have to compete while it's raining.
It's supposed to rain up there.
But you got to compete with the lights being on early because you have to turn those things early.
It's a weird start. Isn't 5 like the weirdest start?
It's the weirdest time, especially here. Now, if this was the left coast, that'd be different. But the fact that it's here, now you're going to talk about shadows and stuff like that. You talk about balls coming and not really being able to see the balls. So that's an added advantage.
Crazy. You also have Cardinals and the Cowboys. Yeah. That's the typical game. And that's, if you're a Giants fan, you're kind of watching that game, aren't you? Of course, Anthony won't, because he doesn't care. He hates everything. He's miserable at 1-5. How'd you like life at 0-6? Just saying.
Let's get a little extra money in your pocket.
Cheese and sour cream on the taco.
This is Lunch Money.
All right, after a 6-0 weekend, we're feeling pretty good about ourselves. A little daily fantasy today off the Monday night doubleheader. So let's put our roster together. Andy Dalton's our quarterback. We'll go with our running backs, Edwards-Helaire from KC, and then Edmonds, because Anthony loves Edmonds. Wonder why. What's his background again? Our wide receivers, Hopkins, Diggs, Lamb. That's a pretty good lineup there. We'll go with Kelsey as the tight end. This almost seems too easy.
Yeah.
Gallup be our flex. I like Gallup as a flex, right? That's a pretty good flex. He was had 2 outstanding catches against the Giants.
And then Marcus, our defense,
I don't know how I feel about this, but it's probably a money-related thing. Our defense is going to be the Cowboys. It's definitely money related. Against Arizona's offense, we're going to go with the Cowboys.
That's funny.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Really?
But that's all about money. You only have $10,000 to spend, so we spent it on the talent. We went talent, straight talent, so that's what we're doing. Hey, Bart, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention a game that we talked a lot about and a story we talked a lot about last week, and that is Nick Saban returning to the sidelines as predicted for Saturday night's game between. It was a huge game. Alabama, Georgia.
Amazing.
Number 2, Alabama.
They scored Normandy.
Georgia. Yeah, he did. He punched COVID right in the face.
Amazing how quickly Alabama he healed up from that. I wonder who administered that test.
I got to explain something, though. This doesn't make sense. So Alabama wins 41-24. Huge game. They stay undefeated in the SEC. 21-point second half for Alabama as they shut down Georgia. Great halftime adjustment made by the head coach, who, by the way, tested positive for COVID-19 on Wednesday. Wednesday and was like zooming into practice so he could at least watch. 3 days later, he had three negative tests that were required.
Right.
So then he gets that third test. In 30 minutes, he's at the team hotel preparing for he's on the field that night getting ready. He's screaming at a sideline official with his mask half off his face right during the game. But where else in the world do you test positive?
Alabama.
And then three negatives 2 days later, and it's like, okay, you're good.
Alabama. Alabama.
But wasn't this predictable?
Exactly. Come on,
this is
man.
Almost like somebody else took the pee test.
Yeah, exactly. A Wizinator. He had a Wizinator.
Can you prove that it is your urine, sir?
Yeah, spray it on
Look,
you.
I don't know what. It's obviously something that goes up his nose that they test it with, right? We've all had that test done.
Man, come on.
But I mean, it's incredible how 3 days after testing positive,
Not only is he 70, but he's a miracle worker. He can heal himself in 3 days.
I'm telling you, it's what they said. He just punched it right in the face.
Yeah.
And they win a big game and stay number two. And, oh, my God. And then, of course, Trevor Lawrence. I mean, what they did to Georgia Tech. My God. We had to get that story in. Great stuff today, Bart. I'll see you tomorrow.
I'll holla.
Don't miss Bart Scott and Alan Hahn. Weekdays at 11 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN.